Oyez, 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 the Honorable Court of Appeals for the Third District of the State of Texas, sitting in Austin, is now in session.
Welcome. This is where we would usually say, please be seated, but I think we're all stationary in our positions. So welcome to the Third Court of Appeals. We have only one case on today's docket, and for that reason, I'm going to hold off on requesting announcements and begin with general instructions for today's proceedings. Today's oral argument is broadcast live on YouTube, but the participants are in multiple locations. It is for that reason that we ask the participants to please mute your audio except when addressing the court. We will endeavor to do the same, and we're trying to do that so that we can limit any other unnecessary delays and to avoid talking over each other when we try to ask questions. For those of you watching on YouTube, today's proceedings will be viewable in YouTube only during the live presentation. The audio file will, of course, be available on the court's website. Usually that is uploaded by the close of business today. Y'all may also note that the court's red, yellow, and green light timer has its own tile now. So y'all get to obsess over it to the same extent that the lawyers and I do in the proceedings. I hope you enjoy that. And I think that that timekeeper is kind of the star of the show. So as the attorneys already know, the appellants and the appellees each get 20 minutes to argue their case. The lights will remain green until the lawyers approach the end of their time in argument. When there are only 2 minutes left on the time, for that person's argument, the light turns yellow. When they are out of time, the light turns red. When the light turns red, we ask the participants to please wrap up answering any question that they were addressing. And we ask that you please do not continue on down another path without first asking leave of court. As we have multiple appellants in this case, I understand that the time allocation is a bit different and that y'all have discussed this with the clerk of the court. I understand that there's going to be 8 minutes first to either the state of Texas or the Brazos River Authority, then 7 minutes to Brazos River Authority or the state of Texas, and reserving 5 minutes for rebuttal with the 20 minutes to the city of Houston occurring in between. If that is not accurate, please let me know when I ask for announcements. And with that, this is cause number 032076CV, the Brazos River Authority in the state of Texas versus the city of Houston in Sylvester Turner in his official capacity as mayor for the city of Houston. And for Brazos River Authority.
I'm Jane Weber, representing the Brazos River Authority. I will go first. And use 8 minutes, and then I will do the rebuttal on behalf of the BRA.
And for the state of Texas?
Beau Carter, on behalf of the state of Texas, I'll do the latter 7 minutes.
And for the city of Houston and Sylvester Turner?
Holly and Petty for the city of Houston and Mayor Turner.
Very good. And if we are all ready, Ms. Weber, you may proceed.
May it please the court. I'm privileged to present argument today on behalf of the BRA, and we'll be sharing the time as we discussed with Beau Carter, representing who will be arguing on behalf of the state of Texas. I will address the for sale issue and the local laws issue, and Mr. Carter will address the retroactivity issue and the statutory issues. And the court's analysis in this case regarding whether or not House Bill 2846 is constitutional must begin, as any constitutional challenge goes, with a presumption of constitutionality. And there are two core concepts that underpin the specific issues presented here. First is the nature of surface water as a precious state resource, and Texas law regarding the legislature's broad authority and affirmative duty to safeguard and conserve water and avoid waste pursuant to the Conservation Amendment. And the second core concept involves the history of Allen's Creek Reservoir, because it affirms that the legislature has designated Allen's Creek as a site of unique value and has determined that developing Allen's Creek as a reservoir is in the public interest and would constitute a beneficial use of water. And that history also reveals the legislature's long-standing history of detailed involvement in the permitting of Allen's Creek. And House Bill 2846, I hope the court will find, is a proper, valid, and sensible solution that the legislature adopted to resolve an impasse that was preventing Allen's Creek from getting developed. And against that critical backdrop, I would like first to address the for sale issue. Very cognizant of the fact that the court needs to march through and address a number of complicated constitutional issues. And to that end, I hope today to be helpful to the court in presenting what I think are the most straightforward, cleanest paths through those issues. Regarding the for sale issue, I want to make 3 points. First, I think the easiest way for the court to deal with the for sale claim, with the claim that the House Bill 2846, it requires an unconstitutional forced sale of Houston's property. I think the easiest way for the court to resolve it would be a textual, definitional holding that House Bill 2846, the conveyance involved there contemplated, is not a forced sale as that term is used in the Constitution, as reflects the traditional definition of forced sale, which is a sale to satisfy a debt. This is not a debt. It's not a sale to satisfy a debt. And the court could decide this case simply in that way. I don't think that's probably the best way, the smartest way to address that issue. I think the best way is to address a merits issue that's going to overlay several of the different claims. And that is, this is not an unconstitutional forced sale because the water permit rights at issue, Houston's water permit rights, are not a vested right. And that is plain from longstanding Texas common law analyzing the scope of surface water rights under the Conservation Amendment. The Texas Supreme Court in the Wright case, which really is the seminal case, explained that a water right, when matured and perfected, constitutes a vested right. Well, this water right is not matured and perfected. The Texas Water Code at section 11.026 of the Texas Water Code says that you only perfect a water permit right, the surface water permit right, it is only perfected when the water is put to beneficial use. And that hasn't happened here.
Ms. Weber, I have a question kind of in that area. So the state has the authority to terminate any unused water permit, right?
Yes.
So, but just because they have the right to do that, does that necessarily encompass also the ability to, through an action, force the sale of that permit and then transfer it to someone else? I mean, I think that if they did everything right, they could absolutely cancel the permit. But does that also mean that includes the opportunity to cancel it and to make them transfer it somewhere to some other entity?
Yes, Your Honor. And that reflects exactly the history of the Allen's Creek permit. The first permit that was issued in 1999 ordered the permit to be issued to Houston and the BRA. It ordered it to be issued. It didn't exist before, and the Water Development Board was ordered, the TNRCC was ordered without notice or hearing to give that permit to them. So we know from that, from that history that the legislature can grant a water permit right. We know from Wright that the legislature can take away an unused or wasted water permit right. And what House Bill 2846 does is both those steps all in one throw. It says, Houston, you are wasting. We take away from you. BRA, you're ready, willing, and able. We order it to be transferred over. So the permit is not going to expire or be terminated, but rather the 70% of the permit that Houston owns is going to transfer over. So BRA will go from being a 30% owner to 100% owner. So what the legislature is accomplishing in 2846 is doing two steps all in one throw, but both of those steps, it had authority to do it. But I think on the forced sale issue, it's important to bear in mind that the forced sale provision is not an absolute prohibition against mandating a sale of municipal property. If it were an absolute, then you could not condemn city-owned property through eminent domain. That would not be possible. That's a forced sale, and yet municipal property can be condemned through eminent domain.
But isn't it, if I can interrupt you, I'm sorry, Ms. Weber, but under the condemnation scheme, the idea is that you have a right and you are, you get something in return for the condemnation. In this case, the legislature, other than the amount that has already been paid by Houston, did not foresee or did not contemplate that Houston would be, that they would get anything in return for what we could call a condemnation.
Well, Your Honor, and that's because an unperfected, unvested, wasted water permit right is not something to which you're entitled to compensation. Houston is getting compensation for, the statute calls for compensation for all of the things that it has invested in it, but not for the thing that it is wasting. And regarding the local law issue, my very last few seconds, I submit to the court that the real question for you, where the horse is buried, is this case the same or different than Maple Run? That's the operative precedent. Is this the same or different than Maple Run? And just a couple of points real quick. First, look at the bill at issue in Maple Run. There is nothing, apples to oranges. That bill did not do anything other than shift debt. Second, the conservation amendment aspect of Maple Run was a pretext. There was none. There were a bunch of other MUDs who were in exactly the same boat who were not addressed. Here we have a unique, widely significant reservoir project. And finally, the state didn't even step in and attempt to defend the constitutionality of the bill that was at issue in Maple Run. It is not anywhere remotely like House Bill 2846. And with that, I apologize for going over my time. I turn it over to Mr. Carter to address the retroactivity and statutory issues.
Thank you. Mr. Carter?
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I just want to follow up on something that the River Authority was just talking about with Maple Run. Specifically in that case, the statute dealt with a water district that was no different than other water districts, and yet specified it had to only apply to Maple Run. And the court determined there was not a reasonable basis for singling out Maple Run. That's different from here because, one, the city of Houston has not pointed to any other water project that the legislature should have covered with this bill, but also just because with the nature of this project being unique, that there wouldn't be any other type of project for it to cover. Now, transitioning to the retroactivity issue, the Supreme Court has said that not all retroactive laws are unconstitutional, so it created a balancing test for determining whether a retroactive law is constitutional. But the court doesn't need to reach that, and the easiest way to decide this is to say that this is not a retroactive law at all. A retroactive law is one that changes the legal consequences of past actions. And here, Houston says its prior inaction is the past acts that the legal consequences are being changed. This law is entirely prospective. Without regard to anything that's happened in the past, the law requires Houston to transfer its interests to the BRA. Now, consider—
Can I interrupt you real quick? You say that it's transfer the interest, but shouldn't be the city have a right to rely on the permit that it has? I mean, they have this permit where they're allowed to start construction, or I guess complete construction, no, start construction by 2025. Shouldn't they be able to rely on that permit?
Your Honor, the court in Wright said that that a permit holder does not have a settled expectation in that right until it puts the water to beneficial use. And so until that day comes, Houston does not have a settled right such that it can rely on it. And more importantly, as far as this being retroactive, Regardless of how Houston acted in the past, imagine it actively pursued this project. The legislature still could have done this, but Houston would have brought a different claim, probably a takings claim. But it couldn't bring a takings claim here, primarily because it didn't have a vested right. But that doesn't make this law retroactive. It merely requires Houston in the future to transfer its interest to the BRA. And the legislature, in passing this law, has the plenary authority to act for the health and safety of its citizens, and it carries with it a presumption of constitutionality. And so the court assumes either that it's not retroactive, or if we were to get into the Robinson test, that a significant public interest is served by this law, and that the relative de minimis nature of the prior right that is asserted to be impaired is not significant enough to outweigh the public interest.
What is your position on what's the compelling public interest here? Is it getting the dam built, or not the dam, the reservoir built?
So we're working from the baseline that the legislature is working to further the significant public interest of the health and safety of its citizens. So here it's getting this reservoir built as expeditiously as possible. We've seen as they've been involved since the beginning in order to get it built. And the legislature, in its policy judgment, decided that the best way to get this built was to transfer the interest to the BRA. And the court shouldn't second guess those policy judgments just because Houston disagrees with that narrative.
So by having Houston sell its rights here, this reservoir would get built quicker. Is that just having the BRA by itself is what you're saying, is they will be able to move quicker than having Houston together?
That was the legislature's judgment based on the testimony and also the fact that they're working from not second guessing them, but just taking it as what they've said, is that that's what they believe is the correct course for this project. Now, turning also to just briefly on the local law claim, another important aspect of that is the significant statewide interest that goes to show a reasonable basis. Here, a broad swath of Texans in the lower Brazos region would benefit from having this done more expeditiously. And in that sense, the interest goes to provide a reasonable basis. And so it's something that the city of Houston has not really pushed back against, is the statewide interest that is necessary for carrying out this project. Now, lastly, while I'd like to discuss briefly these statutory claims, it goes almost without saying that a statute cannot violate another statute. The canon goes that the later enacted and more specific provision is the one that prevails. And here, the later enacted statute is House Bill 2846. And it's more specific because it applies directly to the Allen's Creek Reservoir. And so in the event of any conflict, the later enacted and more specific provision prevails. And that's this law. Now, briefly, I'd just like to go through each of the claims and to say how the easiest way to decide each of them is. On the forced sale claim, Houston has not pointed to a single case where this forced sale provision has been used outside of the sale of property to satisfy a debt. That's enough, and it's sufficient, and that's how the court should decide it. On the retroactivity issue, this law is not retroactive, and so the court doesn't even need to get into balancing. But even if the court does, this law satisfies Robinson because of the significant public interest that the legislature has in completing this project expeditiously. On the local law claim, this law has a reasonable basis. It works from the baseline presumption that the legislature knew what it was doing, it considered both alternatives, and it chose one in its sound judgment, and that it's constitutional. The legislature has a reasonable basis here, as it has from the beginning of this project, to ensure the health and safety of its citizens and to conserve and preserve the state's water resources. And finally, on the statutory claims, a statute cannot violate another statute. This law was later enacted and more specific, and so that claim fails too. Thank you, Your Honors.
Can I ask a question, Judge? Mr. Carter, can you, what's the significance of the the 1999 priority date? You know, if the state could have chosen to cancel the permit through the TCEQ versus, you know, entering the statute, is that a reason why they didn't? Is that important at this moment?
Yes, Your Honor. My understanding is that terminating it would have removed the priority date and moved it up. And so that's part of why they've gone outside of the administrative process. I believe the BRA might have a better answer on that. But my understanding is the priority date is why they've continued to go outside of this permitting process.
Ms. Weber, do you agree?
Yes, Your Honor, that is one of the reasons why the legislature chose to do this. The priority date is significant because the priority of the of a given appropriated water right establishes a pecking order of who can get water out first. So in times of drought, there are times where a watershed will have a water master. The Brazos River has one. And in times of drought, the water master directs traffic and says, well, your rights are older. You can take your water out first, even though that means that the newer rights holder down the line is not going to be able to get what they have appropriated. And so the maintaining that priority date is one of the reasons why it would be beneficial to handle the how to make this thing move forward in the way that the legislature chose to.
And would you agree that if this would have been done statutorily, the process would have gone with the canceling, that Houston would have actually had more protections than under the HB?
No doubt. But in fact, the administrative cancellation process, it is more likely than not that both Houston and the BRA, this permit is exempted from the administrative cancellation process. So the options were three. First, do what the legislature did. Second, just let it hang. Actually, the options are two. First, do what the legislature did, or second, do nothing and wait until the permit expires in 2025 for failure to start construction. Because the administrative process is not in fact available. And I think Houston argued that in their brief, that they're exempt from cancellation under the administrative process. And so if I'm exempt from cancellation under the administrative process, but the administrative process is the only venue through which anything can be done about this permit, well, that's not tenable. So the only two options were, let it ride until 2025, and which ignores the prime directive, which is to get this reservoir built. And Justice Smith, you're exactly correct. The prime directive is to get this thing built. And the only way to do that is to step in and to do something that is unusual, highly unusual, but all of the permitting has been unique. This thing is a unicorn, and it has been so since 1999.
And thank you, Ms. Weber. We're going to go ahead and hear from the City of Houston now. Thank you.
May it please the court. I'd like to focus on the three constitutional issues and then rely on our briefs for the remainder. If the court has any specific question about the statutory claim, I'll be glad to answer that question. But let's start with the forced sale, because that's really the easiest one. And there are really two issues here that the state and BRA continue to misrepresent. And if the court remembers nothing from today but this, it needs to understand that the rights that Houston has in the Allen's Creek project, which are exactly the same rights that BRA has, because we're joint permittees, are vested rights that can be divested, can be taken away only based on a cancellation proceeding. And
could they be affected by inaction for, say, 10 years?
There is a provision in the Water Code that says that if you don't use water, if it's a regular appropriative right, there's a little bit different provision for construction of a reservoir. But if, for example, you violate that statute from which Houston is exempt, Houston and BRA are exempt, then the TCEQ, not the legislature, not the attorney general, the TCEQ can initiate cancellation proceedings and try to take your rights away. And the Stacey Dam says exactly that, that is the way that you do it. You can't collaterally attack those proceedings. Wright says that is the proceeding that you have to use. And so for the state to come in and do as it has here and kind of circumvent that proceeding because it just decided that Houston, as opposed to BRA, who was responsible for the development of the reservoir, is somehow wasting water, but BRA is in perfect compliance, just shows you what a sham this was from the beginning. Now, again, the rights that we own are vested rights. Engelman, which the representative from the state has conveniently forgotten, is a case directly on point in which this Court of Appeals has applied the forced sale provision to water rights and said that they're covered by it. Now, there wasn't a lot of discussion in that case, but the state acts as if this is sort of an advisory opinion and all of that was in flux. It applied it and said, look, we've evaluated under the forced sale provision and it doesn't apply. In addition, the water code itself specifically includes water rights and interests as property that it can acquire. So the idea that and the argument that the state and BRA make, which is utterly nonsensical, is that we have a statute that says that you must sell your ownership interest in this, Houston, but for purposes of challenging the constitutionality of it, you don't have any ownership interest at all. That's bizarre. It's not what the law says. So we have a right that is cognizable.
Oh, pardon me, ma'am.
Go ahead.
In Engelman, I didn't think that the order said you had to do, you had to sell all your mineral rights. It didn't say you had to sell all your allocations. It didn't say you had to sell all of your assessments or do all these other things. I thought that the order in question said you got to do something rather than go into bankruptcy.
Right.
And then I thought that there was some language in there that said, you know, that they didn't really reach the constitutional issue because of the type of order that was at issue.
They didn't say that. What they said was that the parties had not contested it. However, the state had to at least agree to its application there in order to evaluate the case. It couldn't have done anything else. There's not a lot of law on this, as I'm perfectly willing to concede, but we have a lot more law than the state or BRA has. And there's no reason to exclude it from these provisions. For example, let's just use their example. We made a distinction under the Ridge case, but let's use their example under the homestead exemption. And they say, oh, no, that says that it has to be an execution. But the Supreme Court of Texas, in the Sampson and Keene versus Williamson case, 6 Tex 102 at 117 through 118, says this, quote, "The Constitution obviously intended that the homestead should be exempted from the operation of any species of execution or from any forced disposition of property." That's what the Supreme Court of Texas said, and that's still good law. In addition, if you look at Black's Law Dictionary, before it had simply shorthands for sales, it says, a forced sale is a sale which is not voluntary. That's what the case law talks about. And this Sampson case in particular talks about the distinction between voluntary and involuntary. So this is a case which is a forced sale. And again, this is another nonsensical argument. They are trying to say that a sale that is forced, that is mandated, unlike the one in Engelman, where there were options to sell other property, this one says price or maximum price, party, timing, and property. So there's really not much for Houston to negotiate except how to get out of its other contracts. So this is a forced sale under the forced sale provision. And there's really not any way for them to get around that. Now, I don't know if the court still has any problem with the interest, but Houston is a permittee here, just like BRA is a permittee. That is prima, that is conclusory evidence of its status of ownership of those water rights, and those water rights are vested rights under Wright and Stacy Dam. This notion that somehow—
may I interrupt you?
Sure.
So, the argument, obviously y'all disagree on whether Houston has vested rights or not in the water. Ms. Weber has talked about, you know, the state can give and the state can take away. So can you explain to me your most succinct argument as to why these are vested rights versus future rights?
Well, number one, I would say for the forced sale provision, they don't have to be vested rights. For the local law provision, they do. So let's make that distinction. We can own a fire engine under the forced sale provision and it still applies. But second, they're vested because Wright and Stacy Dam say that they are vested subject to a condition subsequent. Now that's, I think, really important language for the court to consider and write, that you have the vested rights. They're considered property rights, vested rights that are subject to removal through the cancellation procedure, which is Stacy Dam, which is what Stacy Dam says. And it says that you have to use that procedure, that it's not up to the legislature to come in and cancel those. And I think that it was Justice Triana that was talking about that this would give Houston more rights. That's the whole idea, is they didn't want to give Houston any rights. And they also didn't want to put BRA's permit at risk, because if Houston's fell, theirs would fall as well. And but that's why they did it in this way.
And how can the city argue legitimately, which is you have to go through the statutory provision to cancel the permit. And by the way, the statutory provision doesn't apply because we are exempt. So is Houston...
No. There again, I think the court is getting confused about the use of water. It's not that we're exempt from cancellation. Quite the contrary. We are subject to cancellation and our permit becomes void if we violate the construction date deadlines. We're governed by the language of the permit, not by some, you know, ancient notion of perfection and going out and putting a cup of water in the stream somewhere. We're governed by the language of our permit. And if we violate it, that permit goes away for both of us. So we're not exempt from the proceedings. We are exempt from the use requirement and for termination or cancellation based on use. So that was a misstatement by the BRA's lawyer. In addition, we also have title to, or we also own the land, because this is not a title dispute. This is a thing that says that we have to sell whatever our interest is. And all of the contracts and all of the permits say that we own both the water rights and the land. And so that's going to have to be dealt with in this, in any transfer. But we also, I think, have a vested right to the site. And this is something we've talked about in the brief, but not maybe made as find a point as we need to. And that is that there it is undisputed here. They want to talk about waste. They want to talk about, you know, Houston's inaction or whatever. Houston is in complete compliance with all of its contractual obligations and all of its financial obligations. That is by contrast to BRA, which is not. BRA is responsible for design. It decided that it was going to pursue another permit, 5831, I think, 5821. And that it would pursue that through appeals and last through 2018 before it ever even started negotiating with us about design and contractors. That is their responsibility under the contracts. They don't tell you in their arguments that all of this is something that they were supposed to do. They were supposed to bring Houston contracts. They didn't do that for us to approve. They were supposed to get the design and stuff, start negotiating. Instead, they went to the Speaker of the House and started figuring out how to undercut Houston and deprive it of its rights. So this notion that Houston somehow had wasted water or whatever is just fantasy and is not borne out by the record. And I would ask the court to look at the citations to the record that we have in our brief on that idea. But I want to get back to our sort of vested property right in the land. And that is that because we have paid for everything, because we have are entitled under our contracts to have BRA change, go out and get new deeds, which they were obligated to do, which they are in breach of doing. We have a vested right to do that, even if it is not the title to it, that is something that is encompassed by the for sale provision. So I think we've talked about the execution enough, so I'd like to move then to the retroactivity, unless the court has any more questions about for sale. This is a retroactive law because, contrary to what the state's lawyer said, it operates retroactively. It punishes Houston, but not BRA, for the fact that the contract, that the construction has not begun 5 years prior to the date specified in the permit and all the contracts. And so what it is done is to say, Houston, even though you're doing exactly what the contract tells you to do, even though you're doing exactly what the legislature told you you could do, we're going to take away your permit because we think that's waste. And that is what makes this a retroactive law. Now, what would make it unconstitutional as a retroactive law is its figuring into the Robinson case. Now, they've tried to suggest to you that there's a compelling public interest here, and that is getting it built. But contrary to the fantasy, the fiction that they have put in their brief, this isn't a case where the reservoir is not going to get built, because there's no evidence in this record that Houston ever did anything to prevent it or ever indicated that it was not going to go forward. And they've cited only to two pieces of evidence. They say, oh, there's all this evidence of waste and you need to search the whole record. Well, the court doesn't have to do that. They should have done that. And the only thing they came up with was a miscite to the record, Clerk's Record 593, which, far from saying that Houston is trying to stiff them on money, contains the statement from Carol Haddock that says the city of Houston is willing to stand as a partner in the best interest of the state in this project. You know, that's what Houston has said. Also, throughout Carol Haddock's affidavit in Plaintiff's Exhibit 21, she talks about Houston's intentions to go forward with the project. They then talk about Houston's trying to lease water and saying that somehow that's an indicator that it either doesn't have the money or doesn't want to spend the money. That's ridiculous, because what Governor Abbott said was what Houston is doing in trying to have people who will use the water now voluntarily enter into agreements to use it. And then when we need it, it'll come back to us. Those types of voluntary agreements are exactly what we were doing. The idea that we were not going to go forward with the project, that we were willing to enter into long-term leases on for 50 years, doesn't make any sense, and it certainly isn't a realistic or reasonable inference. That the bill would...
So much of what I'm hearing is... I'm having a hard... Well, I'd like to connect it back to the determination by the trial court that all of these things are what made, was it 2846? I can't remember the number right now, that made this act unconstitutional as a retroactive law. It sounds like there's a lot of discussion about why this may be imprudent. It sounds like there's a lot of discussion about whether or not someone's exceeding the scope of their authority or things like that. But I'm not sure how these facts here relate back to the question of whether or not this is a retroactive law.
Well, let me see if I can do this. HB 2846 doesn't speed up, doesn't say that it's to be done faster. It doesn't say anything about expanding its scope. It doesn't say anything about price. The only thing that the bill does is to change the owner. Now, they're trying to say that somehow that means that the project is going to get built, but they never bothered to have any evidence of that. Instead, they have to have, in order to satisfy, to defeat Robinson, they have to show a compelling public interest that overcomes the heavy presumption against retroactive laws. This is a retroactive law, And the question is, did they overcome that presumption because the burden of proof is theirs? They had to then show that there was a compelling state interest or compelling public interest in changing ownership. And what the court found was that there really wasn't any, because there, again, there's no requirement that it be constructed faster. And Houston was in full compliance. BRA is the one who isn't in compliance. So there was nothing for the court to hold on to say that there's this interest that you've got to get Houston out or somehow everything will blow up. In fact, what could have happened is they simply could have, the two parties could have got together and said, look, let's just build it faster. But they didn't do that. BRA went and pursued another permit until 2018, and we had to sit waiting by the phone until they did, and then they still not complied with their requirements.
How does the legislative history of all this play into our analysis when dealing with this? Because this wasn't, you know, it didn't go through the normal process of getting permits to the TCEQ. It was the legislature who did it. There's a legislature who expanded the time frame, all that. Like, what is that? How does that play into our analysis with all this?
That's a complete red herring. Because what happened in this case is the legislature stepped in with a dead permit that HLNP had and said, let's revive it. And so they then said it can be reissued to the Texas Water Development Board. There was nothing about Houston. There was nothing about anybody else. There was no gift to Houston. TWDB then reissued that permit to Houston and BRA and itself because it held alone, and included in the permit language that said that this is to be governed like every other permit. And so this notion that somehow this was a gift or this was a one-off, absolutely not. That's how they sold it to legislators, saying it's not going to affect Drearwater, water, just screw Houston. That's what they were talking about. But here, the legislature really didn't have that much of a role when we, because of the nature of the dead right that was revived, they've gone back to the legislature. But the idea that we have an asterisk or something on our permit and we don't have rights under it, I think is really inappropriate. And because my time is running, I'd like to skip over to the local law, because I think that there's one big thing here. And unfortunately, there was no argument on the other side. So I'm just going to say what I'm going to say. And that is that this is not what they're going to probably try to tell you is this is some kind of fact issue. It isn't, because what has happened here is BRA and the state of Texas have said, we're going to do something to Houston that we're not going to do to anybody else ever, including BRA, that's a joint permittee. We're going to take away their rights without giving them the water code provisions. And they have to show some reasonable basis for that. What we're arguing is that the basis on which the few bases which they've suggested, and there weren't any findings, so we really don't know what it was, but the basis that BRA and the state have suggested would all be illegal as to BRA or anybody else. And as a consequence, they are unreasonable as a matter of law. And that is what the court below decided. So for example, they have said that, you can't pass, that this is a law that takes away Houston's rights, that targets them and treats Houston differently. And this is a case where Maple Run really applies. And since they had a little time over, if I can take a little time to talk about Maple Run is...
Yeah, let's keep it like within a minute or two though, but
okay,
yes.
That's fine. Let me just talk about Maple Run. Maple Run is a case that's very much close in terms of facts, because they were required to take ownership of a dissolved corporation and they were singled out and they found a local law. But they found the local law in part, because they found that Chapter 59 didn't somehow overwrite it. And that's really the import of Maple Run, is that it says that Section 59 does not allow the state to take over and micromanage the finances of the cities, which is exactly what they've done here. They've defined a contract, they forced us to go out and look for water on the open market, and they've micromanaged an asset here. And that is not what they allow to do. So I'll just end with a quote from them that says that Section 59 cannot reasonably be read as authorizing local legislation that arbitrarily singles out a community for financial regulation. That's exactly what they did while leaving BRA, who is equally responsible for everything that went on with regard to this permit, with a reward, frankly. And that's the essence of what a local law is something that singles out an individual an individual locality for punishment or for some type of ruling that is not applied equally to others. And that's exactly what happened here. Court has no more questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Weber.
May I please the court, I'd like to make three brief points in my short rebuttal time. First, Justice Smith, you asked about the legislative history, and it does reflect, contrary to what Ms. Petty says, it does reflect that Houston has not stepped up. Houston has taken this water, this very precious, very scarce surface water permit right, and put it in a mason jar and buried it in the backyard. And that is waste. And the legislature has not only the authority, but the duty and the mandate to prevent waste like that. So if you look at our brief, starting at page 17, has a lot of discussion from the legislative history. But for example, at Clerk's Record 584, there's testimony from the executive director of the Texas Water Development Board that Houston has not paid any attention to its permit until this week, when the House Bill 2846 was introduced. It is not a part of Houston's water planning for the next 50 years, as reflected in the state water plan. And where it is reflected as part of it, intimately as part of BRA's long-term planning. And starting in 2014, the record in the water plan reflects the BRA lobbying the Region H planning group to bring up the priority of Allen's Creek because we need it so badly. And at Clerk's
Record, in that vein, can you address Ms. Petty's argument that BRA is the one who's not in compliant with what was required design-wise and otherwise versus Houston being in compliance?
Well, Your Honor, there is, we can do like this. He did it. No, I did it. No, you did it. No, I'm not the one. The fact is that this didn't happen. The ball has not moved forward. There is objective evidence of Houston failing BRA proposing. Here's the BRA board appropriated $86 million for the design and permitting process, conditioned on Houston appropriating that money and Houston not doing it. But it's sort of the song, the county blames the state blames the city, and the highway still ain't paved. And the bottom line is that in 2019, what the legislature undertook to do is to advance this ball. The Allen's Creek permit, putting the city and BRA together in a 70-30 was something of a shotgun marriage, and it wasn't working out. But because Houston would not appropriate the money, BRA only 30% could not undertake it on its own without Houston's commitment to pay. And so what the legislature did in 2846 is give them a divorce. And Houston will give you back what you have in it, but this has got to move forward. And it is within the legislature's authority to do that. You can, Justice Goodwin, you're absolutely correct that someone could say, but wait a minute, how come they didn't make it go the other way and put it to the 70%? They could have done that. They could have made that policy decision, perhaps. It probably would have been constitutional for them to make that policy decision. It wasn't the one they made, and it wasn't prudent because the records show that BRA was in fact planning on this, was in fact advancing the ball and considering Allen's Creek as part of its water usage, had appropriated the money, had lobbied to try to advance it, and in fact owns the dirt. But the legislature made that choice. We're going to get a divorce of these two. And because the prime directive is Allen's Creek going forward. Very briefly, in the last time I have, this permit, if something didn't happen, if the legislature didn't act, this permit would expire in 2025 because the construction cannot commence by that time. And the law, Texas Administrative Code 30, Texas Administrative Code 297.51 is the provision that talks about commencing construction, and it requires actual construction. And if you can't actually start turning earth by that time, then you can seek an extension, but there's already been one in 2011. And to get an extension, you have to show reasonable diligence, showing a steady application of effort and work diligently and continuously. And there's no way that Houston could possibly satisfy that. There's no way that any of that is going to happen because it'll be at least 5 to 7 years of permitting before construction can actually happen. So the fact is that this permit was
isn't that the same whether there's one or two, whether the city's with BRA or BRA's by themselves, isn't there still going to be the same amount of time for permitting and all that buildup before construction commences?
Yes, Your Honor, but here's what we have right now. The legislature has picked a horse. And right now, as soon as this litigation is over and the transaction happens, then BRA will be on it. And the permitting process is going to start and using the BRA in 2025, it likely will not have turned a spade of earth by that time. But in 2025, it can show the legislature that I have diligently been working on this. I have exercised reasonable diligence in order to get whatever is the short amount of extension that that would be required before the earth can actually be turned. But right now at this point, with nothing happening, nothing, no appropriation of funds, nothing could be happening. That's not at all possible. The sky will not fall. This does not portend doom for the holders of water rights because this is a unique project. No other reservoir project, no other set of permits in Texas has this legislative history, has this involvement, has this unique significance to the state. This is a one-time only practical down and dirty, getting the job done, effort by the legislature to resolve an impasse, to split apart this unholy matrimony and let Allen's Creek be actually advanced. And we urge the court to reverse the judgment below on the three constitutional issues and the statutory, to reverse the evidentiary issues on the two, the legislative history and the water plan that are advanced, and to render judgment that House Bill 2846 is valid and constitutional in all regards.
Well, thank you, Ms. Weber, Mr. Carter, and Ms. Petty. We appreciate your arguments here today. The cause will be submitted, and this court is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.